This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive. Progressive helps you compare direct auto rates from a variety of companies, so you can find a great one, even if it's not with them. Quote today at Progressive.com to find a rate that works with your budget. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DiMeo. She would have choices. Her parents realized that early on. She was a gardener, first off. A member of the finest family on Long Island. The lords of the manor of Gardener Island. 3,000 wooded acres off the far tip of the land. Close enough for the East Hampton hi-hats to envy from the lawns of their mansions. But far enough to be ever out of reach. A green light across the water. And she was lovely, Julia Gardner, their oldest daughter. A dark-eyed beauty with a quick wit and an easy smile. She would make a fine wife one day for some fine gentleman. That was always the plan. The only plan for Mr. and Mrs. Gardner. That was the point of daughters. If you didn't need them to churn butter or clear brush, if you were a wealthy family in those days, the 1830s, and for so many years before that and after that, a daughter was to love, certainly. To propagate the species, to bring joy, one would hope. These gardeners weren't monsters, one would hope. But daughters were supposed to consolidate and expand prestige and influence and wealth and power through marriage. Let's just say it plain. So that was the plan. And so at 15 years old, Julia Gardner was sent away to Madame N.D. Chagaray's Institute of Young Ladies, the finest finishing school in Manhattan, to complete whatever work genetics hadn't taken care of already, where she would learn the things she would need to know to fulfill her purpose. Guitar, singing, French literature, needlework, the proper use of the proper silverware, how to flirt but not too much, how to speak on respectable topics but not too much. She made a dazzling debut that positioned her as a debutante to watch, a match worth making for any respectable family. And soon she had suitors, so many suitors, jockeying for position. But then cracks began appearing in the plan. Julia was spirited, which was fine, to a point, and opinionated, which was less fine, and she liked shopping and dancing a bit too much for her parents' taste. And she seemed to be letting some of these boys get too close. And so they reminded her of her responsibilities. As Julia Gardner, as a daughter, there were lines she was not to cross. And those lines were there for a reason. Don't ask the reason. Just stay behind them. There is no record of the moment she stepped over the line. We don't know if she stumbled, only to realize later on she was in undiscovered country. We don't know if she planned it. Don't know if she stood one night at the edge, threw her hair back with a laugh, and leapt. But we have a document of the transgression. It is an advertisement for a mid-tier retailer in which Julia Gardner of the Long Island Gardeners appeared in illustrated form, strolling beside a bearded man in a fur coat and top hat, while holding a handbag that says she likes to shop at Bogart and McCamley's on 9th Avenue. Where, quote, their goods are beautiful and astonishingly cheap. Her parents freaked out. All of New York society, it seems, freaked out. One of its glittering lights, from one of its most respectable families, had done something none from their world had ever done before. She'd become a celebrity spokesmodel. Right after that, someone published in the paper a tepid, romantic, poetic ode written anonymously in her honor, called The Rose of Long Island, which might as well have been a sex tape. And New York society trembled with the righteous and desperate clutching of pearls. These people had let their sons court this harlot. They'd contemplated engaging in marriage arrangements at some acceptable later date with this girl's parents. A girl who, though beautiful, had revealed herself to be astonishingly cheap. And those parents did what any concerned parent, concerned about retaining the value of an investment asset, would do when that asset stepped out of line. They sent their daughter to Europe and waited for the scandal to die down. Julia returned a year later, chastened, her parents thought, though they were unaware of just how much she enjoyed the freedom that distance provided, of just how many of these chaste flirtations they'd heard about may not have been quite so chaste. They were unaware of the German Baron and the Belgian Count, but they were aware that she was now of marriageable age. And if they wanted to increase the likelihood of making a proper match, they needed to move beyond the reach of the scandal. And so the Gardners spent the next social season in Washington, D.C., hoping to position their oldest son as a future congressman or a senator or other powerful muckety-muck, and to position their oldest daughter as the future wife of some powerful muckety-muck. Now, these were strange days in the Capitol. President William Henry Harrison, the hero of the Battle of Tippecanoe, known across the land from story and song, had just died a mere month after his inauguration. And his vice president, John Tyler, had ascended to the office. And no one in Washington, on either side of the aisle, really, seemed to want him there. But Julia Gardner was a different story entirely. She had always been beautiful and witty, but now, after her grand tour of Europe, she was worldly too. And it seemed that the eligible bachelors of the district found her irresistible. There was the young naval officer whose family owned a suitable amount of New Jersey. There was the New Hampshire man being groomed to take over the seat of its senior senator. There was James Buchanan, a bachelor with his eyes in the presidency. But he was 50, and Julia found him a bit too ancient for her taste. But there were other ways to get close to the presidency. John Tyler had three sons. One, his oldest, was married, and his wife played the role of first lady in his father's administration. His mother had suffered a stroke not long before his father had been elected vice president, and she died not long after he'd become president. But that left two more sons for Julia Gardner. And she was delighted when her family received a dinner invitation from the first family. John Tyler Jr. was handsome and charming and an irrepressible flirt, and quickly laid siege to her heart, as she wrote to a friend. He was also married, and Julia was skeptical of just how imminent his supposedly imminent divorce actually was. And yet she was happy to keep the games going at Christmas Eve dinner, and again for a night of cards in February, when she was seated across from the president himself, apparently sussing out her suitability as a future daughter-in-law. But that night, the president of the United States, 53 years old, 5 months a widower, kissed her. Now, he had also kissed her younger sister Margaret, as the family was leaving for the night. But Margaret hadn't, as Julia had when he leaned in, pulled away, and then hustled down the stairs, only to be followed by the president, and then chased around the furniture until he caught her, laughing and joking, but also not at all joking. President Tyler was over the moon for this 20-year-old girl. He invited her everywhere, with her whole family along as chaperones, of course, walked them home from church, had them as his honored guests to a ball, and at that ball, thrown in honor of George Washington's birthday, when he saw her in a white dress, she was radiant. And when he saw her dance with one of her many suitors, he asked if he could cut in. And as they danced, he asked her to marry him. She didn't want to marry him. He was the president, but he was 33 years older than she was. Her parents were torn. He was the president, but he was 33 years older than she was. And he was the president, but he wasn't much of one. No one thought he'd win re-election, and he wasn't all that wealthy. So figure once he was out of office, he'd be an unpopular ex-president with an estate no bigger than the Gardner's. The point of a daughter was to improve one's family's position. This looked like a lateral move at best. And Julia was no ordinary daughter. She was a prize commodity. The president's interest was nothing if not testament to that. So they didn't push Julia to say yes. But the president was undeterred. For 2 years, he pursued Julia Gardner, and for 2 years, she rebuffed his proposals. He wrote her mediocre poetry, he bought her things, and she was affectionate but firm. He was too old for her, and that was that. Meanwhile, the Gardners continued to enjoy the fruits of his pursuit of their daughter. Their ambitious son was meeting all the right people, the family was always at all the White House events, and Mr. Gardner and the girls were even invited to the social event of the fall of 1843. The christening of the USS Princeton, a mammoth steam and sail warship, with the two largest cannons that had yet been placed on board a boat. And Julia and her sister and her father joined the president and 400 bigwigs. as the Princeton took a ceremonial cruise down the Potomac. It was a perfect autumn afternoon, and the guests thrilled as they fired the first of the two cannons, and drank cocktails and gossiped in the September breeze as the ringing died down in their ears. And then they assembled to watch another cannon blast, and Julia covered her ears. And an explosion shattered the ship. Shrapnel tore through the deck, and 20 passengers. And Julia fainted, and awoke sometime later in the president's arms. Her father was dead, one of six people killed, along with the Secretary of State, the Secretary of the Navy, and a slave owned by the president and employed as his personal valet. What is the use of a marriage? Love, surely. Comfort, companionship, church-sanctioned sex, children, financial security. For Julia Gardner's mother, the use was clear. She put it plainly to the president when he asked her for her daughter's hand once again. If this man, who was 9 years older than she was, who was 33 years older than her daughter, was to marry that daughter, he had to provide her with all the comforts and elegancies that Julia had been accustomed to. Her husband was dead, her hold on Gardner Island was in jeopardy, and her daughter, no matter how lovely, or worldly, or refined, no longer had an assured inheritance to offer a suitor. So Mrs. Gardner took the offer on the table. In 4 months after the explosion on the deck of the USS Princeton, Julia Tyler became the First Lady of the United States. Now, whether this story has a happy ending or not depends on where you stand. Stand on a lot of things, I suspect. Politically, socially. At the risk of tipping my own hand, I will admit that I look to the story of Julia Gardner, the debutante who found a kind of liberation when she decided to step beyond the lines her family and her historical moment would have drawn around her. To the story of a young woman, self-assured, aware of her own power, who had fun, who found pleasure in that power, even as society's rules limited what she would ever be allowed to do with it. I look to that story, I don't know, looking for a heroine, ahead of her time. And I'll leave it up to you whether you find one. Julia Gardner married President John Tyler because her mother wanted her to. And because she wanted to. Because she wanted material comforts, and financial security, and emotional comfort. He was so good to her, after her father died, she wrote in letters, that it affirmed a goodness in him that she didn't want to push away anymore. And so her father died and she married a guy who was basically the same age as her father, and that is just the way it is. And she loved being First Lady. She brought all these traditions she had seen on her European tour into the White House. Receiving lines, she had ladies in waiting. All of these courtly things that struck a lot of people as un-American. But she loved them. And the president loved them. And she loved him. There is little reason to doubt it. They were married for 18 years, until Tyler died at 71 years old. They had 7 children. They loved entertaining. They loved the Confederacy and all it stood for. And that is the woman she was. And I will leave you to sort out your own feelings about her. Because far be it from me to draw lines around Julia Gardner. The Memory Palace is produced by me, Nate DeMayo, with research assistance from Andrea Milne and engineering assistance from Alyssa Dudley. The show is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. We receive support from the Knight Foundation, from MailChimp. We get ad-serving technology from AdZerk. And as I like to do from time to time, I want to encourage you to check out one of my fellow Radiotopia shows. If you haven't heard The Heart, then hop to it. It is a wonderful, artful exploration about intimacy and sex and romance. They describe it as a radio show about the terrors and triumphs of intimacy, the bliss and banality of being in love, and the wild diversity of the human heart. And as someone who has struggled to come up with a pithy encapsulation about his own show, I have to say that the women from The Heart nailed it right there. Go see what I mean. Find The Heart and all the other Radiotopia shows at the newly revamped Radiotopia.fm. Talk to you soon.
Radiotopia. From PR.